This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Writer Tim Westmoreland is with me this afternoon in the studio. A collection of his short stories has just been published by Harcourt. It's called Good as Any. The stories in the collection are dark and funny. The title story involves a love triangle of sorts. There's a man named Mitch, a woman named Delilah, and a bitch named Rosemary. Rosemary becomes the love of Mitch's life. More on that story in a moment. First, some background on Tim Westmoreland. He grew up in Texas in an abusive family. He was diagnosed with diabetes when he was a little boy, but the family paid little attention to his condition. And he was put down for his interest in books, grounded, as a matter of fact, for reading. But Westmoreland made it to the University of Texas to study astronomy. Later, he pursued his MFA at the University of Massachusetts. He's in Champaign-Urbana for a reading later this afternoon at the Illini Union Bookstore on Wright Street in Champaign. The reading and book signing is set for 4 o'clock. And coming up Thursday evening, he'll be in Chicago. So if you're listening in the Chicago area, you might want to check him out at Barbara's Books, 7:30 Thursday evening. Tim Westmoreland, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
How did you make it out of the house, where you grew up?
That's a good question. I mean, I think for me, books were a place where I retreated to books and to the stars. At night, I would sneak out of the house. And I had a small telescope. I saved up money and kind of worked my way up and bought nicer telescopes. And I spent a lot of time alone and just studying on my own. And that's where I found solace in that the quiet that was so much a contrast to the house that I grew up in, where there was no quiet and where my voice wasn't really heard in the house. And I didn't feel that I needed to have a voice when I was out studying the stars and reading and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, that probably is apparent, this relationship with loneliness and the relationship with silence that are so much a part of these stories are true to who I am and my relationship.
But now you're interested in breaking silences and breaking the silence. So when did you begin writing? And when did you begin writing about topics like illness?
Well, you know, I got a fellowship to go to UMass, and that was sort of a fluke. I began writing when I had to decide what I was going to do with my life once I had to leave the physics department because my eyes were beginning to give out. I went to the English department because those professors were influential and they were the classes I seemed to enjoy. And I began to read and I began to write at that point. It wasn't until I was a senior that I took a creative writing class. And up to that point, I'd only written poetry. But this teacher didn't know anything about poetry, had done his MFA in fiction. And so I wasn't allowed to write poems at all. And I began writing stories. Mm-hmm. And about 97 or 98, I began to realize that one of the things that was in me that had not been voiced were issues of illness and disability and how you have to live in an able-bodied world with an illness like diabetes or with any kind of illness. And it really became important to me then.
Mm-hmm. I told listeners we'd tell them more about the title story, Good as Any. What would you like to say about it?
Well, I think it is a love story. I think sometimes, certainly the views, some people get awfully concerned about me when I write stories like this because it is a dark story, and I don't always identify with my narrators and that sort of thing. But what I wanted to do with that story is to talk about love in a way that maybe readers hadn't really seen it done before. I mean, if, you know, everybody's read a love story here or there and they kind of quit listening. And I thought if I wrote a story in this way, it would allow me to say things about the way humans relate and the way animals relate and how they're very similar and also very different. But I wanted to try to articulate from the margin a little bit about what it is to deal with love and to deal with loss. And this kind of triangle allowed me to do that.
Would you read just an excerpt for us?
Sure. I'll read from the beginning, Good as Any. Delilah left us when Rosemarie and I slicked a cat's the other white meat sticker on the Bronco. That's the half of it. The epilepsy papers, too, were part of it, but they came later. And the truth was Rosemarie made Delilah feel like the other woman, the one less loved. Maybe she was, I guess, but Delilah was a twitch, certifiable. I said, don't let the door hit you on the way out. She was no artist, didn't understand the dexterity of leaving, of coming back for belongings, or just forgetting them altogether. Delilah lugged a huge suitcase out of the bedroom, around the corner, dragging with both hands. I had to hold the door for her. Screw you, she said. I closed the door behind her. None of this seemed to bother Rosemarie. She sat on the divan, listening to her favorite compact disc. She's got the best brown eyes. It's just you and me, kid, I said, sitting down next to her. I put my arm around her, stroked her back. We've got the whole bed to ourselves. Ave Maria ended. She towed the remote, and the song repeated again. I closed my eyes and listened. This was some strange fetish she had, one that I liked. It's part of what brought us together. I should have known better than to get involved with a woman who loved cats, I thought. With regard to Delilah, I should have known.
And Rosemarie, we should say, is a Staffordshire Terrier.
Right.
That Mitch comes sort of by accident to adopt.
Right. He comes by an advertisement in the newspaper, which is in the personal section. And, you know, you expect, if you've read them, obviously, you expect some sort of strange situation. He gets himself into this unknowingly and accidentally finds this animal that he really can learn to love.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it seems to me that when you think about animals, they can provide us with almost a similar space that the stars might, or that books might.
Right.
Ave Maria is this dog's. She has a fondness for Ave Maria, and she can find it on her own and make the
right
music player play.
Right.
So there's kind of a there's something similar there.
I think, yeah. I mean, in some ways, there's what I'm addressing is the where language fails, and then there's a whole other way of communicating, and that's what I'm trying to talk about in this story. And that's one of the things that happens with illness, is there's such a silence that surrounds illness because we don't know what to say, and so hopefully these stories are about how we learn to overcome that and communicate to each other and sometimes to animals what we need to say and feel in our lives.
And to find new ways to communicate, because I think poor Delilah, her problem is she's so literal.
Right. Right. There is a very literalness to her. And, you know, that's partly from not understanding, I think, that other part of the world, the part of the world that Rosemarie fills and that Mitch is trying to understand. And it is also articulating for me the literal world that I lived in the house that I grew up in, and then the other world, which was somehow more meaningful to me, which I found in books. It's sort of in what we call virtual reality now, you know, in a lot of ways, it's books are another form of virtual reality, and astronomy is too.
You write about illness and the silences that surround, engulf illnesses. There is a quote that came along with the biographical sketch from Harcourt that said, I want to write about its every nuance. Those are your words. I want to write about illness's every nuance. What has, you know, given your situation with diabetes and with the deep depression, a major depression that you suffered, what has writing about illness and the nuances of illness given you personally?
A way of coping. I think it's something that it overcomes you, and sometimes you don't know until you're too far into a situation, like when you have a hemorrhage in your eyes or you almost lose your leg, and they catch up to you, and you don't realize, I think, at first, how it's taking over your life, and it can ruin your life and who you are as a person, because there's a very big difference between the body and who you are. And it's allowed me to understand, in many ways, my own illness, but also since my mother and my wife's mother passed away within 6 weeks of each other from cancer, suddenly and unexpectedly, it was a way of grieving and coming to terms with that. And so I came out of with this book with a better understanding of who I am and how I have to carry on and continue writing and continue being a person, even though certain things may be going wrong physically with me. And so in that sense, I think I learn from my characters, because sometimes they articulate or don't articulate, in some cases, things that are very important to me that I didn't understand about illness. Mm-hmm. And certainly has made my life and my relationship with my wife stronger, because it's when you're in a house and all of these things are going wrong, it's hard to know what to do.
We've got to wrap it up here. I'm sorry to say. Maybe some other time when you're back through town, you'd stop by, or
I would love to
do something on the telephone.
That would be great. I'd love to.
How's your health?
My health is right now at a very stable point. We've kind of gotten my eyes under control and my kidneys and everything, so it's holding. I've got about 30% kidney function, which is enough to work on.
Well, the best to you. Take care.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Tim Westmoreland has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine.